Hello, everybody. I am Bill Buckmaster, along with our ace producer, Rosemary Brandt. We welcome you to the Buckmaster Show on this Wednesday. It's our midweek edition as we close out February here in a couple of days, 26th of February already, 2014. We are live each weekday, 12:04 to 1 on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's intelligent voice, and we make it very easy for you to hear the program, not only live, but after it's finished up. Rose is very good about posting the program exclusively to our website, buckmastershow.com, where I think we've got every program archived since we began this show over 3 years ago. And again, that's buckmastershow.com. During the noon hour, we'll get things rolling with an interview with Dr. Randy Fries. Dr. Fries is with me in studio. He is running for the State House of Representatives in District 9 as a Democrat. Then we will check in with Mike Fader of the Diamondbacks. No spring training in Tucson, I think for the first time, at least going back to the 1940s, that we will not have Major League spring training here in Tucson. We'll talk to Mike about that. Then 30 minutes past the hour, Randy Seriglio of the Center for Biological Diversity weighs in on the controversy over the reintroduction of bighorn sheep in the Catalinas. I think initially there were 31 introduced. Now, thanks to the mountain lion population, we're down at least 13 have been killed off. Robert Hendricks then closes out the show, our education contributor to the Buckmaster Show. Let's welcome now Dr. Randy Fries. Dr. Fries, Associate Medical Director at the University of Arizona Trauma Center. He was one of the surgeons who operated on victims of the shooting that occurred at Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords' Congress on Your Corner event on January 8, 2011. Dr. Fries, thanks for being with us.
Certainly. Thank you for the invitation.
I believe you were the first physician to see Gabrielle Giffords that day?
There's always a team of physicians, yeah, particularly when you have a mass casualty event. But I was the first trauma surgeon to assist and evaluate her.
And Gabby Giffords continues to make a remarkable recovery. We're always glad to see that. And, of
absolutely,
course, her husband, Captain Mark Kelly, from what I understand, were instrumental in recruiting you to run for the House. Does that characterize it pretty right?
I'm not sure if recruiting is the right word. It was a slow
process. Encourage you?
Probably more so. it was a slow process, but I got to know Mark those nights, those first few nights and weeks that Gabby was in the ICU, and I think I made an impression on him, and he did suggest to me several times you should consider running for the state legislature, and as time went by, I sort of thought more and more about that and decided to move on it.
What was the decision? What finalized the decision for you to get involved?
Again, it was a gradual process. I can't really pinpoint a moment where the light went on and said, I'm going to do this. It was a gradual process, discussions with Mark, and then after that, just paying closer attention to what was happening in the Capitol. I got a subscription to the Capitol Times and just started reading every week about the bills that were being discussed and upcoming debates and other ideas and things that were going on in the Capitol. And then I actually found a candidate training course through an organization called Leading for Change and took that, learned a lot more about what it meant to be a candidate, what campaigning required. And then that sort of led me to the decision. And to be quite honest, the Medicaid debates were very interesting to watch. And I felt like more of those very important debates were going to be addressed in upcoming sessions. And I wanted to participate in those, and that's sort of what made me make the decision.
Are there any other physicians in the state legislature that you know of?
Currently, Dr. Eric Meyer.
That's it.
I believe he's the only physician currently in Arizona legislature.
What do you think as you watch what's going on with SB 1062, the so-called religious freedom bill, and the horrible publicity that Arizona is receiving? You've got threats to cancel the Super Bowl and on it goes if the governor does not veto SB 1062. Some of your thoughts.
Well, I'm not sure I characterize the publicity as horrible. I would characterize the bill as horrible.
The publicity being horrible for the state.
It's unfortunate for the state as a consequence of this bill passing both houses. I just think it's just surprising. Surprising it made out of committee to begin with. Surprising that the leadership of both houses were pushing it through. And then again, surprised at the vote at the end of the day. And I'm very hopeful that the governor will do the right thing and veto the bill.
Dr. Randy Fries is with us on the Buckmaster Show. He is a candidate in District 9, which covers pretty much the central part of Tucson, parts of the Tucson Valley. He will be running as a Democrat. And, of course, right now it's sort of shaping up to be a three-way race with two incumbents, the Democrat Victoria Steele in District 9 as a representative, and then you have Ethan or the Republican. So what are the issues then, Dr. Fries, that are on the top of your agenda?
Well, when I'm asked that question, I really want to make clear that one of the most important things to me is rebuilding our public education system. I am a product of a good public education. I was raised by a single parent, my mother, in Maryland. I went to public school, was able to get a scholarship to University of Maryland undergraduate, was able to get low interest rate student loans to attend medical school. And I really want to be sure that those types of resources are still available. A sound public school system, I believe, is the first priority of any state government. And I think that we need to start focusing on rebuilding our public education system that has been dismantled in the past several years.
Sounds like you're a huge advocate of public education, something that some are questioning whether our superintendent of public instruction is in the same camp.
I certainly understand or paid attention to some of his recent actions and was a little bit surprised by them, as most. But again, I would really want to focus on getting our attention back to adequately funding the public education system, getting them adequate resources, reaching out to teachers in the classroom to help us figure out how to do that best.
How about jobs and economic development?
I think that, of course, that's always an important topic.
Always.
Always an important topic. And Tucson and Southern Arizona is a growing demographic area. I think I just heard on NPR today that Arizona's GDP is expected to outgrow the national GDP or economic growth. But I think if you support the infrastructure of education, it will also bring corporations and other small businesses here as we produce well-trained, educated young people.
Okay, economic development, you've got education. What else is on the agenda?
Well, I think it's very important to face an issue that the majority of Arizonans and the majority of Americans, in fact, would like us to start talking about intelligently and debating in the legislature, and that is responsible gun ownership legislation, comprehensive background checks. There has to be a middle ground where, and I know there's a middle ground, and we have to find the middle ground where responsible citizens, law-abiding citizens, can have their guns, but we make it harder to keep these types of weapons out of the hands of criminals and mentally unstable individuals.
Dr. Randy Free is with us. He is running for the House of Representatives in District 9. And what about health care? As a physician, what do you see? Where could you be of service to this legislature?
I think it's really important, as someone on the front lines in delivering health care, it's really important to have that that viewpoint represented when some decisions on financing health care are being made. And, sometimes people that make decisions about budgets and funding and finances don't really understand what it's like on the front line. And I think that viewpoint would be an advantage in the legislature. And I could bring that.
Your own background, you said you grew up in Maryland. Tell us a little bit about what brought you to Arizona.
Sure, Bill. I grew up in Maryland. I spent high school, college, and medical school in Maryland in the Baltimore area. I then did my surgical residency in Denver, Colorado. I spent 7 years doing that. I did a 5-year clinical residency and then 2 years doing a trauma research fellowship. After that, I had incurred a commitment to the United States military because they financially supported me during my civilian residency. I spent 4 years in the United States Navy, two of those years I was in Okinawa, Japan, and I was assigned to the USS Belleau Wood. And then I spent the second half of my commitment in San Diego at the Camp Pendleton, which is a naval hospital in the San Diego area.
What has the reception been among your colleagues when you tell them you're going to be running for the House? And quite honestly, how does that impact then your professional career?
I think that's a very important question, and one I have given a lot of thought to in conjunction with my wife. She was a very big part of this decision. You know, I've had people ask me, what's a perfectly good doctor doing running for the legislature? And, you know, my response to that is usually that it's an extension of community service. I mean, I see my job now as a trauma surgeon, as community service. You know, I work sometimes 24 hours at a time. I'm spending 24 hours straight in the hospital. I work weekends and holidays to be standing at the ready to serve the community for those who are injured. And I see this as an extension of that. And it's certainly not something new. I mean, doctors serve as leaders in the community, and this is just an extension and assuming a broader leadership role.
All right, Dr. Freese, we're going to wrap it up here with you, and people can find out more about you. I have your website here, and correct me if I'm wrong. It's Dr. Freese, and that's F-R-E-S-E for, no.
No, it's
F-R-E.
F-R-I.
Oh, F-R-I-E-S-E for house.
That's correct, yes.
.com.
F-R-I-E-S-E.
There you go. Dr. Freese, thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Thanks for having me. Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a break right here. It is our midweek edition of The Buckmaster Show. We will be right back after we listen to the fine sponsors and supporters of this program that make our work here in Tucson possible. We'll be right back with Mike Fader.
Devereaux, Arizona inspires hope in the lives of the most vulnerable members of our community, our children. In Pima County, there are more than 4,000 children in foster care that need your help. Devereaux, Arizona's foster care program gives you the training and support you need to make a difference in the life of a child. Donate, volunteer, or become a foster parent. Find out how at devereauxarizona.org or call 520-296-5551.
If you want the great taste of bottled water without the hassle of going to the store, call Culligan and ask us about the Culligan bottled water delivery service either to your home or to your place of business. Culligan bottled water is as pure as it gets. The basis of the treatment of the bottled water is steam distillation. Its processing and its cleanliness is a healthy alternative to other beverages. Culligan water is fresh and delicious. One sip will tell it all. And since Culligan water is delivered right to your door, residential or business, you won't have to lug heavy bottles. Whether you have city or well water, Culligan can make your water taste better with an easy solution that fits any budget. Right now, for a limited time, you get 30-day full money-back guarantee, trial to include. Water dispenser free for 1 month. Initial 15 gallons of water free. Thereafter, $6 per month on the dispenser and $6.95 per 5-gallon bottle with an annual service agreement. Call Culligan at 792-9700 or visit us at arizonaculligan.com. Culligan, better water, pure and simple.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soup, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our neighbors realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and build a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's PCC students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a smart, thriving Tucson and Pima County. Our region has not been immune to the unprecedented economic challenges of the past few years. During this time, PCC has prided itself on offering crucial programs and services at an extremely affordable price. We remain one of Arizona's best education bargains. With your ongoing support, we look forward to embarking on new directions and building new community connections that ensure the people of Pima County will prosper today and in the future. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Biosphere 1 is the world we live in. Biosphere 2 is an amazing reflection of Biosphere 1, a UA Science Innovation Center transforming, not conforming. Making ideas happen, like the massive new Mountain Slopes of the LEO project, which is reinventing Biosphere 2 into a remarkable enterprise for 21st century discovery and imagination. Biosphere 2, open daily, north of Tucson, America's science city.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by our friends at Moncada Construction, licensed, bonded, and insured. Chris Moncada and his team, they specialize in drywall repair, carpentry, insurance restoration, and they do fantastic interior painting. Give them a call at 520-390-2247 or on the web at Moncada, M-O-N-C-A-D-A, construction.com. Let's welcome now to the Buckmaster Show longtime Tucson baseball advocate, certainly longtime general manager with the Tucson Padres, Mike Fader. Mike is up at the start of spring training, the Cactus League getting underway up in Phoenix, where there are really 15 teams using 10 facilities in the Phoenix Valley. And unfortunately, Mike, Tucson is on the outside looking in. I think it's the first time that we haven't had or not going to have a major league spring training game here in many, many decades. Is that correct?
Unfortunately, that is correct. And that's disappointing. One of the things I'm going to work on, you know, throughout the spring is talking to some major league clubs and making sure that there's some spring training games that come back to Tucson. I've talked to the two teams that are here right now, the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers, have both been teams that have played. Hopefully we can get them to come back to at least play one game next year. And, my goal is to get anywhere from 2 to 4 games next year. And if we could do that, I think it'd be fun for a lot of people. I mean, last year, you know, we drew over 11,000 people for each of the games. And it worked out really well. So, we'll see. Just a lot of this has been disappointing. I mean, it's, you know, losing the AAA team, and not having baseball in Tucson this summer. But we can't sit and feel sorry for ourselves. We have to do something about it. And I'm committed to that. I mean, I think some people have heard we've got 4 AAA games. The El Paso Stadium is not going to be complete on time. So we're going to have games El Paso, which is the Padres. A lot of people are going to know the names, versus the Arizona Diamondbacks AAA club in Reno. And that's going to be April 11th, 12th, 13th, and 14th.
Mike Fader with us, and Mike is at the start of spring training, the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers getting underway. Mike, what was the problem? Was it the teams didn't really want to get on a bus and come down to Tucson? It's much easier, of course. Everything is centralized up now in the Phoenix Valley. Did that have something to do with it?
I would say it has a small part to do with it. It's probably more, if you see this facility at Salt River, it's gorgeous. I mean, it's bigger and better. I mean, that's what we're faced with, unfortunately, the competition. And it's not only the fact that the major leaguers have to ride the bus. When you only have 2 spring training teams in Tucson, it really made it very, very difficult on the minor league level, because the minor league players all have spring training with the sight of their major league team. So it became very counterproductive to play every single day against the same team. Here they could play multiple teams all throughout the month of March. So it was a few things. I honestly still believe spring training is not dead in Tucson. I think someday we're going to get it back. I just don't know when.
Mike, let me ask you about Tucson, Arizona, being an area here of 1 million people in the valley. If you looked around the country, you'd probably be very hard-pressed to find another area of this size that did not have professional baseball. Is that correct?
It is. I mean, we will be the largest city in the United States without professional baseball, and that's a shame. I mean, we tried to make it work over the last 3 years, and I do believe people thought we were temporary, and they looked at us as temporary. But the reality is, if we could have done well, we could have figured out a way of keeping AAA here. Unfortunately, we didn't, and it just never worked to the level it needed to work. And that's something that is disappointing. And I, for some reason, we've talked about it on your show before. That location will never work for minor league baseball.
All right.
I think for spring training or big events, I think it's great, but to get people to come out 8 straight days, it just doesn't make sense, whether it's perception or reality. It doesn't make sense to people. And that was one of the things that severely hurt us.
Well, we like to look back a lot here and look at our mistakes in Tucson, and I don't think we look forward enough. And perhaps let's look back just quickly about downtown. Was that the problem? It was the problem. Okay.
Yeah, it should have been down there. And I saw the plans. I saw everything. It just became political. And, when things become political, sometimes that's what you get. I mean, look what's going on up here right now, the state of Arizona. And I don't want to get in this discussion, but, the bill, I mean, and what's being the governor's being faced with. I mean, it just gives our state a black eye. Or as people scratching their head and saying, what are you guys doing? But that wasn't our problem in Tucson. But if it was downtown, I honestly could tell you AAA baseball would still be there.
Hmm.
And I think the trolley would have moved up. The downtown renovation would have had some life. Now it's tremendous. So someday, I would love to see a downtown ballpark. And if so, I think it could be very, very successful.
Longtime Tucson AAA general manager Mike Fader will be overseeing those 4 games. When do tickets go on sale for the April 11th through the 14th?
Next Tuesday. Tuesday the 4th, we send letters out to our season ticket holders. We've gotten a good response on that. And a lot of it's going to be real back-ended. As we get into April, we're going to push a lot harder.
And these are called the El Paso, the Chihuahuas, is that right?
The Chihuahuas, right.
Okay.
That's a funny name.
Interesting. I want to quickly touch on something that you posted on your Facebook, and I know you're very concerned about the A-10. And you are a community leader, and
I'm an honorary commander at DM.
Yeah, I thought so. So quickly, how concerned are you about this Defense Department reshuffling?
Oh, you have to be concerned. It's a $1.5 billion industry. I was out at DM a couple days ago, and the people love it at DM. My squadron is the 354th, the Bulldog, and that's the elite A-10 pilots and squadron. So they have a lot of trepidation right now. And can we become the F-35s? I don't know. F-16s. I mean, you got a few things. But it's been a great location. It's great to fly in because of all the open land. We need to fight. I mean, Washington, D.C. always heard the people complaining about noise. They never heard the people saying good things. And I know the DM-50 has really stepped that up. But we need to, I always say, why does Phoenix keep getting everything? Because they figured out how to do it right. Can we not say things? And I just think that's an effort that everybody really needs to get behind.
All right, Mike Fader, enjoy the game with the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers launching spring training. And
thanks,
we will talk to you again very soon. Thanks, Mike.
All right, thank you.
Okay, Mike Fader, longtime general manager of the Padres. He's also overseeing the four-game Chihuahua, El Paso Chihuahua, homestand that they're going to have here in April in Tucson. We'll be right back on the Buckmaster Show at our mid-break.
Do you want to learn how to live healthier for your stage of life?
Then make plans to attend the Ages and Stages Active Adult Lifestyle Expo on March 8th at Casino del Sol.
Discover new ways to enrich your daily life. Stay healthier and be informed and engaged for the different life stages from midlife and beyond.
The Pima Council on Aging Ages and Stages Expo features 150 local exhibitors, a wide range of fun activities, food, demonstrations, seminars, prizes, and live musical entertainment.
The Ages and Stages Expo is free for adults of all ages, March 8th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Casino del Sol. Event proceeds benefit Pima Council on Aging. For more info, visit pcoa.org. Presented in part by Arizona Daily Star, Assurance Healthcare, TEP, and this station.
If aging isn't your issue now, it soon will be. So attend the PCOA Ages and Stages Active Adult Lifestyle Expo, March 8th at Casino del Sol.
Viro Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Viro Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Viro Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Viro Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Viro Amore on the web at viroamore.com.
Inside Tucson Business is your best source for the business news of metropolitan Tucson. Whether you own or manage a company, want to start your own company, or just want to know what's happening with the region's economy, you need to read Inside Tucson Business, Southern Arizona's business news leader. Read us online at InsideTucsonBusiness.com or call 294-1200 to get your copy today. Inside Tucson Business, it's not personal, it's just business.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Jerry!
What's wrong?
The client conference call is right now.
I thought it was next week.
I don't have the presentation ready.
Okay, okay. Blame the internet. Say it went out.
They'll never believe that. They know we have Cox Business. Our internet is too reliable and is 100 times faster than basic DSL.
Say customer service is closed.
Cox Business has 24/7 support.
Well, say it would take too long to get a technician here.
No, they know the award-winning customer service is local. They told us to get Cox Business.
The call has started.
Good morning.
I forgot about this meeting. We have terrific internet.
Switch to Cox Business Internet and Voice for only $99 a month. Speed options up to 100 times faster than basic DSL. Get a 30-day money-back guarantee and free professional installation with a 3-year agreement. Visit coxbusiness.com and switch today. Offer ends 4/30/14. Prices exclude taxes and other fees and may be subject to minimum service requirements. Speed comparison based on Cox Business Internet 150 megabits per second service versus basic 1.5 DSL. Actual speeds vary. Limited 30-day money-back guarantee. Exclusions and other restrictions apply.
Welcome Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. My name is Bill Buckmaster, and we're here on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice, 790-2040, 790-2040. If you, our listeners, would like to weigh in on the controversy surrounding the reintroduction of the bighorn sheep in the Santa Catalina Mountains. So far, I believe there were 31 sheep that were reintroduced from an area over in Yuma to the Catalinas, and I think we've now lost 13, more than a dozen of the bighorn. Let's bring in now Randy Siriglio of the Tucson-based Center for Biological Diversity. Randy, how are you?
I'm good, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we haven't talked since this whole controversy. We haven't talked really at length here on the program about the controversy. Has the center taken any kind of a position on the reintroduction?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I represent the center on the Catalina Bighorn Advisory Committee. This is a committee of sportsmen and conservation groups, stakeholders who came together to come up with a new way to do these kind of reintroductions. Historically, a lot of bighorn reintroductions have happened, and they've been quite successful overall. And in the past, that has often included the removal of quite a few mountain lions as a result to give the bighorn sheep herds a chance to become established and get to that natural balance between predator and prey. And with this situation, we're looking at a little different story in terms of the management approaches that are being taken. It's a much more conservative and limited and targeted effort just to remove, you know, the few lions that do actually prey on sheep, and not any kind of a, you know, indiscriminate removal.
Randy, let me ask you a kind of a basic question here. We've lost 13. Are we still in the sustainable range here, or what?
Well, historically, mortality rates for the sheep have been quite high in some of the reintroductions. You know, there's been more than one where half of the initial sheep have died or even more. And, you know, it takes a while for them to become established at times. But as I said, more than 70% of these reintroductions have ended up being successful. One thing that's different about this case is that, unlike previous reintroduction efforts, all of the sheep are wearing collars now. So we're more or less immediately aware as soon as the sheep die, which helps in terms of intervening and discovering disease or any other, you know, factor that may be causing their death. But it also means that, you know, we're getting kind of an alarming curve right off the bat in terms of mortality. But this is not a, you know, an uncommon situation. It's really not.
And we have now three babies that have been seen?
Yes, there are at least three lambs up there that have been observed by folks that are going up to check on the sheep. And they've been observed from, you know, great distances. So the photographs that you've seen in the papers are very fuzzy and, you know, taken through a spotting scope because it's from hundreds of meters away so that they're not disturbed. And, you know, there very likely could be more, but of course the lambs aren't wearing collars and won't be wearing collars. So,
Randy Siriglio is with us from the Center for Biological Diversity, 790-2040, 790-2040. And I know this is a controversial subject if folks want to weigh in. And I want to ask Randy, what is the argument against the reintroduction?
What? You mean the general arguments that
yeah.
we've heard from the public?
Uh-huh.
Well, people are rightfully concerned about the number of mountain lions that are killed, and that's why from the start of this project, we have endeavored to use a much more targeted and limited and conservative strategy regarding mountain lion removal. There's all sorts of tools that have been used in the past that are not being employed in this effort. And instead, you know, we're reacting directly to predation of bighorns and endeavoring to find and remove the specific lions that do so. Most people don't know that there is a very healthy lion population in the Catalinas, and in fact, they are hunted legally every year. Last year, 22 mountain lions were legally hunted and killed in the Catalina and Rincon Mountains combined. That's the management unit. Those numbers have been increasing in recent years because the deer population up there has exploded since the fires 10 years ago. The Big Bullock and Aspen fires burned well over 100,000 acres and greatly improved habitat for deer as well as sheep. And we saw deer populations explode after those fires. The annual deer surveys are double what they used to be. So, you know, biologically speaking, it's pretty predictable that lion populations, the predator population, would also follow suit, and we see numbers that support that as well. So, you know, it's whatever happens with this project, the goal is not to affect the mountain lion population overall in any substantial way. And past research has shown that not all lions kill bighorn sheep. You know, their preferred prey is deer. About two-thirds of their diet is deer, and then javelina and jackrabbits and whatever else they catch. But you know, there are some individual lions that develop a habit of preying on sheep, and if you can specifically remove those individuals, you'll give the sheep a much better chance to survive.
All right, let's go now to the Buckmaster Show live line. Lori has a question for Randy Seriglio of the Center of Biological Diversity. Go ahead.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Randy.
Hi.
What is the reason, or what is the goal to repopulate the bighorn sheep? Is it because they were there in the past, or is it because we want to repopulate so we can have hunters come in and kill them?
Well, that's a great question. The bighorn sheep, desert bighorn, in the Catalina Mountains go back to the Pleistocene. I mean, they've been there for thousands of years. And it's very unfortunate that they winked out about 20 years ago through a variety of factors, almost all of which were human influences. And, you know, my organization, the Center for Biological Diversity, supports reintroductions of wildlife whenever they can be done, you know, in a responsible way with good science backing them up. And in this case, there were habitat studies and analysis done on the Catalinas post-fire, and it showed the improvement in the habitat, and, you know, the mountain could support at least 100 sheep. So, you know, this wasn't a decision that was taken lightly. Those sheep belong there, and we think that it's a good idea to give them a chance to recover an area that they winked out from in the past. In general, you know, even though bighorns are not on the endangered species list right now, they would have been at the middle of the last century, because their numbers completely crashed around the West from, you know, 2 million to about 20,000. I mean, about 99% of them have been wiped out. And a couple things changed. You know, we started to regulate hunting in a more rational way in Western states. And also, sportsman groups started to put up lots of time and money to recover these species. I know it may seem counterintuitive, but, you know, hunters don't want to see the species that they hunt go extinct. That's clear that these reintroductions have been successful because of that support. Now, as far as the bighorn herd in the Catalinas goes, it will probably never be big enough to be hunted. There's a very careful demographic formula that's used to determine how many tags can be issued for any given herd. You know, in Arizona, there's over 5,000 bighorn sheep around the state, and only 100 tags, only a little over 100 tags were issued last year.
Randy, how will we know how the program is progressing? It's almost like we get the daily, or seemingly we hear probably too much about the sheep that have been killed already, but when will we know if we're going to have a success here?
Well, you know, it may take years for that to play out, and that's what we've said all along. The project was designed to have multiple translocations, because you can't take enough sheep all at once from other herds around the state without potentially damaging their populations. So you only, you know, take a few at a time. So this year, 31 sheep were put up on the mountain, but it would probably take at least two more reintroductions to get to a stable number where bighorn and mountain lion coexist in a natural predator-prey balance the way they always used to in the past.
Is there a plan then for like a phase two with another reintroduction?
Yeah, that's always been part of the plan. And, you know, that's what we presented to the public in a series of public meetings last fall. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what we said since the middle of last year when we published an op-ed in the Daily Paper, explaining, you know, the project and the goals for it, and, you know, why we were involved.
Well, it would really help if this drought, if we get some easing, from this drought that we're in? Because that certainly can't help. I wouldn't think it could help the population up on the mountain.
Well, in general, yeah, drought is not good for wildlife. You know, and we're kind of in a new normal here due to climate change and other factors in the Southwest, and it is pretty alarming. This year could be potentially catastrophic, but what I will say is that, you know, a more immediate threat is the threat of catastrophic fire. The Coronado National Forest must move forward with its fire escape program, and they must start using prescribed burns and different management techniques to restore the ecological health of the Santa Catalina Mountains, or we are going to see more catastrophic fires like we saw 10 years ago.
All right, Randy Sariglio, thank you very much. From the Center for Biological Diversity, we always appreciate your input. And Randy, have a great afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bill.
All right, it is the Buckmaster Show, our midweek edition. Our fourth segment is coming up, and that is with Dr. Robert Hendricks, the Buckmaster Show education contributor. We're going to be talking about, should we be teaching handwriting again in the classroom? It sort of has fallen by the wayside in this digital age. That's next on the Buckmaster Show.
Honey, welcome home. How was your trip to L.A.?
Flying out of Tucson was the way to go. I got 3 whole days of FaceTime with the board, and they liked the fact that I saved the company time and money by flying out of TIA.
Oh, honey, that's great. Sounds like your career is really taking off.
You bet. With so many daily flights to L.A., I can get there in no time at all.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word compare to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Want the best care for your companion animal? Then Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson is the place for specialty vets for your special pet. With a state-of-the-art, award-winning facility, only the Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson delivers compassionate, comprehensive veterinary emergency and specialty care 24/7 in a wide range of fields. Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson at North La Cunada Drive at West River or online at vscott.com. That's vscott.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover 2 of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Rug Gallery's extensive collection of new and antique rugs has earned an international reputation and has been featured on the cover of Christie's magazine, as well as many of the world's most respected carpet and textile publications. Since 1987, Tucson's been home to one of America's premier sources of fine Persian and top-quality imported rugs at competitive and affordable prices. With its huge selection of hand-woven rugs from around the globe, the Rug Gallery has rugs just right for your home or the largest palace. Check out the fantastic savings during the February Valentine's Day sale at the place to see one-of-a-kind, new and antique quality rugs. The Rug Gallery in the Jostler Center at the northwest corner of River and Campbell and at RugGalleryAZ.com and on Facebook or call 571-RUGS or 571-7847.
Eagle Eye Rare Coins is Tucson's only nationally recognized coin dealer. For more than 20 years, owner and rare coin expert Rick Snow has been Tucson's trusted advisor in evaluating your coins, currency, collectibles, gold and silver. Eagle Eye Rare Coins at 6464 East Grant Road, next to the Fort Lowell Post Office, and on the web at TucsonSilverAndGold.com or call 498-4615.
Tucson Desert Art Museum. Tucson's newest art museum is home to one of the premier collections of pre-1940s Navajo and Hopi textiles, exquisite classic and contemporary paintings and photography, early maps and historic artifacts. Visualize history through art at Tucson Desert Art Museum on East Tankerverde Road at Sabino Canyon Road just west of Udall Park and on the web at TucsonDart.com. tucsondart.com. That's tucsondart.com.
Hi, this is Sean McCluskey, co-owner and designated broker for Rincon Ventures. If you're a rental owner by choice or by accident, and you're looking to hire or change property management companies, consider Rincon Ventures. We employ an aggressive web-based advertising strategy to market your rental. We thoroughly screen prospective tenants and conduct routine property inspections. Our online system gives tenants the ability to pay rent and file maintenance requests instantly over the web. Our owners can use the same system to instantly check on their properties. Call Rincon Ventures at 881-2258 or visit us on the web at rvprop.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, our midweek edition. This portion brought to you by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, where historic downtown Silver City is open for you to visit all the fine art galleries there. And then after you do all the art gallery shopping, check out the Gila National Wilderness. Great hiking this time of year, especially nice over in Silver City. And it's only three and a half hours east of Tucson. You can find out about the great things to do and places to stay, like the Bear Paw Ranch and Casitas de Gila guest houses. The full list is available on their website, southwestnewmexico.org. Let's welcome now to the Buckmaster Show our contributor on education, Dr. Robert Hendricks, the Associate Professor Emeritus at the University of Arizona College of Education, where he is the former head of the Department of Educational Policy Studies and Practice. He has taught organizational theory, human resource management, and policy at the master's and doctoral level. The former superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District, Dr. Hendricks, was named Arizona's top school superintendent in 1989. And he also has a school named after him. I was driving around the other day and saw someone had a bumper sticker. My child is an exceptional student at Hendricks Elementary School. Named after you. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
That's got to be a nice feeling.
It's a very nice honor, yes.
Yeah, very nice honor. When we were in school, we learned how to, well, how should I put this? Our penmanship was very important in the old days, and I can still remember, I don't know if the kids still have those charts where you, you learn to make a capital letter and a small letter and write your name out really nicely. But do they still teach handwriting in school in this digital age?
Very rarely.
Yeah?
Very rarely. And I think it's interesting. It's hard not for me to be nostalgic about teaching handwriting, because handwriting really was regarded as a science.
It's called cursive?
Cursive writing. And we remember penmanship, making those circles and those loops and measuring the height of our L's and all of those things. I think it's gone by the wayside, Bill. You know, the digital native of today, this generation, is really keyed into using computers, smartphones, and there isn't a lot of practice of the art of writing. In fact, there are only 7 states, including California and excluding Arizona, that even require penmanship anymore.
That's horrible.
And
I think it's horrible. I mean, how do students nowadays even learn how to make their own signatures?
Well, that's a problem. That's a problem. And I think many of us remember the anecdote about the Secretary of the Treasury when he had to write his name for the bills, for bill currency. He had to practice how to learn to write his name because it was so cryptic, it was hard to understand. But I think there's a certain aspect of the flow of writing. There's some research that suggests that the dexterity, the mental dexterity of handwriting might be really important to the development of brain cells. But there are others who say handwriting has really gone the way of calligraphy and it's not really necessary. And it's interesting because last week I was a guest reader in a fifth grade class at a local elementary school. And out of curiosity, I asked the students, how many of you practice cursive writing? Now, understand, third grade is the point where it's introduced in the traditional school. So these were fifth graders. probably got a third of the hands raised that they write cursively. And I ask, how many of you don't know how to write cursively? And probably 20% of the students raise their hands.
Do kids write at all in class anymore?
I think they print.
They print.
I think they print. Yeah. And I would also say that the more recent generations of teachers, they also print. They also print because whether it's more convenient or whether they don't have the skills or whether they feel that by handwriting that they're that it's illegible. And we remember the whole thing about pharmaceutical people saying they couldn't understand doctor's handwriting. But it's really an issue. And I think it might be, even though it's hard not to wax nostalgic about this, it may be handwriting might be a thing of the past.
The movement to have teaching, to restore teaching handwriting to the classroom, that is picking up, though, isn't it?
It's picking up in some states, but
again, those,
as we've talked about
in
the show
before, it's just a handful
before,
of states.
It's the standards. Everything goes back to the standards, and if the standards by current testing are not going to measure that as a skill, which they do not, the new core standards do not include handwriting as a skill that's going to be tested or measured, then it's going to be set on the side. Set aside or maybe eliminated from the curriculum. And that's what I think we're finding in a number of states. It's no longer a grade on the report card. It used to be a grade.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So why was it dropped then in the first place? Was it just the laziness on the part of teachers, or was there a full curriculum change?
I think it's more a matter of full curriculum. I think it's a matter of is this a skill that we hold with a high priority compared to English skills or math skills or science skills. It just hasn't been given consideration. And there are some researchers that suggest that by writing something out by hand, by taking your time, by being more deliberate in your process, it really forces you to think and be more contemplative rather than simply striking keys on the keyboard. And so there might be some suggestion that handwriting from a from mental therapeutic standpoint would be a really good thing to reinstate. But I just don't think it's going to happen, Bill.
So the importance of using the cursive rather than just printing, is there something in the brain that perhaps reacts that makes this more of you said that studies have shown
there's some meager research that suggests that, and of course those people who advocate handwriting will use that as the best reason. But there really are no other major reasons that can be touted from the research standpoint, other than suggesting that if students slow down and rather than mechanically think about what they're going to say, but actually write it out, that they might be more deliberate and more considered in their thinking.
And then outside the classroom, when do the kids even use this? Because no one seems to be writing letters anymore, and they're not even writing thank you notes. They're doing it over the internet with
the
email.
That's for sure. Yeah. That's for sure. Even those, you know, oftentimes I'll get a personal note of thank you, but more often than not, it's not written out.
Wow.
It's a text or it's, you know, from the computer.
But when you do get that written, handwritten note, doesn't it stand out? I know it does.
I think
it
speaks volumes. It says
I still
a
try
lot
to, do
to
it,
me.
But, yeah. Rose is smiling. She knows I'm old-fashioned, and I'm always telling Rose, send people a thank you note sometimes. But she goes, no, nobody sends thank you notes. Well, I still do, and I do like to get a handwritten note.
Well, I think of some of the historical artifacts, such as the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, that are handwritten.
Yes.
The question will be, will students even be able to read it if they don't know cursive? Or maybe we'll digitize it so that students can see it that way.
Well, maybe we're being considered historic artifacts, yes, right,
maybe
here.
So
that's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. Bottled water on the Buckmaster Show is supplied by Culligan. Better water, pure and simple. Culligan for all your year-round residential and commercial water needs. Bob Hendricks, we thank you very much. We'll look forward to your visit with us in March. Thanks.
I'll send you a handwritten note.
Yes, please do. All right. Thank you very much for being with us, all of the Buckmaster Show listeners. Coming up tomorrow morning, Wake Up Tucson with Chris and Joe, 6 to 8, and then a new talk show, local talk show here on AM 1030. It's the Daily Double with Chris DeSimone from 8 to 9 each weekday morning. And of course, we'll be back with you at 12:04. Rosemary Brandt, producer, Bill Buckmaster, host, will be with you 12:04 to 1 for the Thursday edition of the Buckmaster Show. Until then, we wish you a great afternoon and evening.
Intelligent Talk 24/7, AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. On the web at KVOI.com.